Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, you know what day it is. It's Tuesday, and that means it's time for Tuesday Taoism. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first, I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. This podcast presents a psychotherapist and Zen Buddhist perspective on the mind, and it explores the depths of consciousness that creates it. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your reality in your life by mastering the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. And I'd like to say that if you find the content of this podcast helpful, I hope that you'll consider sharing it with others. Now, we have a few series on the podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism, we have our Zen stream on Sundays, and then I do try to throw in an extra episode here and there on another topic related to mental health, manifesting, relationships, just peace of mind, mindfulness, meditation, anything and everything that helps you just experience a greater degree of happiness and peace with your present and with the life that you are creating every moment that you are alive. So for today, it is Tuesday, and we are doing our Tuesday Taoism. For those of you, again, who are new here, Taoism is based on a book written in ancient China 2,500 years ago, give or take a few hundred years. And it's a book basically of ancient wisdom. And it has had a tremendous impact on my life from the first time I read it as a teenager. I returned to it throughout the years and reread it. I've read multiple translations of it. And that's something I say every week, is that this book has been translated hundreds, if not thousands, of times. And really, depending on the translation you read, even if they're both in English, or however many you read are all in English, the authors have a way of translating it quite differently. And so you get a very different meaning depending on who's translating it. Now, my favorite that I have found throughout the years is this one that I've been reading from. Stephen Mitchell is the author. And I really like this one. I resonate with it. But I've read some other good ones too. And but this is the one that I'm reading from, and I always like to inform you of that. So let's go ahead and read. We're up to chapter 58. The chapters are very, very, very short, so it doesn't take much time to read it. And then we'll discuss it a little bit. So this is chapter 58, Tao Te Ching, translated by Stephen Mitchell. If a country is governed with tolerance, the people are comfortable and honest. If a country is governed with repression, the people are depressed and crafty. When the will to power is in charge, the higher the ideals, the lower the results. Try to make people happy and you lay the groundwork for misery. Try to make people moral and you lay the groundwork for vice. Thus, the master is content to serve as an example and not impose her will. She is pointed but doesn't pierce, straightforward but supple, radiant but easy on the eyes. And that's the end, chapter 58 right there. So again, we seem to be in this streak the last week, and looks like the following week. Not going to get into that right now, but we have this theme emerging where these chapters seem to be pointing to governance, leadership, even you could say a little bit political, right? They're talking about certain political ideologies. And again, like I said last week, the purpose of this podcast is not to slip into a political discussion. But there are some very good things that we can take from this chapter, and kind of apply to our practice, for today. So one thing that we see here, that's a theme in Taoism and the Tao Te Ching, is that when you have an individual who is fully aligned, I guess is the best word that I can come up with at the moment, that is fully aligned with the Tao, right? That they have sort of, they're awakened to their own consciousness and They're able to live in accordance with the movement of the universe. In other words, aligned with the Tao. You don't really need to control their behavior. You don't really need to worry about their happiness. You don't need to worry about them being moral. You don't need to concern yourself with that. And in this chapter, what we see is that the more you do concern yourself with that, the more you focus on controlling others and making sure people are happy. And like he says here, he uses the word try a few times. Try to make people happy. Try to make people moral. The more you exert that kind of effort, then what starts to happen, and it's not mentioned in this particular chapter, but it is talked about in other chapters, is that the more you control or try to do something in a certain way, then what you create is lack of trust. It's like you're not trusting them to find it on their own. You're not trusting them to be to connect with their own morality. You're kind of making the morality for them. And then, of course, what happens is that the more you do that, the more they slip out of what it is that you want them to be, right? And this is true on many subtle levels, right? Because this not only applies to, and I think you can deduce here that this is also talking in a certain extent about relationships, right? As when you're in a relationship, if you're trying to control how happy the other person is, if you're trying to control, how they're behaving, you're trying to control their, how their day is going to go or whatever, then what starts to happen is that the relationship can start to be damaged, right? The relationship can start to suffer. And the person that's under that kind of, control, even though it may be well, meant with good intentions, they can start to feel more resistant to that control that is being imposed upon them. So it says it's always, I noticed in the Tao Te Ching, in Taoism, and I've talked about it here multiple times on different Tuesday Taoism episodes, is that it's a lot about balance, right? Extremes are what we try to avoid. And in Buddhism, this is referred to also as the middle way, right? If the legend of Siddhartha Gautama, the original Buddha, is that he at first, sought teachings from the masters of that time. And one of the people, or one of the groups of people that he tried to learn from, I don't remember exactly what they were called. I can't think of the word at the moment. But basically, they were into these extreme practices, right, of starving themselves and hurting themselves, kind of seeing the flesh or the body as the thing that's keeping them from ascension or whatever. So they would literally practice these extreme things to almost like punish their bodies. And he did this. Siddhartha Gautama did this. I don't know for how long, but probably for a while. He eventually found that after he had done it for a while, he was no closer to the answer that he sought, right? So he realized at some point, and supposedly, again, you hear these legends and you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt, because you don't know, you weren't there. We're talking thousands of years ago, but supposedly, I don't know if I read this in a book or I saw it in a film. He used the metaphor, of a string, when you're tuning a string, if you tune it too tight, it's not going to be any good. If you tune it too low, it's also not going to be any good. It's supposed to be balanced. And we see this kind of pattern also discussed in the Tao Te Ching. So we see this theme of balance and avoiding extremes. It's a common thread among both of them. And this is where we get the concept of Buddhism, of the middle way, of moderation. Now, interestingly, for those of you who haven't mentioned this for a little while, but there is sort of a place where Taoism and Buddhism kind of intersect, because it is said, that Buddhism, of course, started in India, and Siddhartha Gautama had his students, his disciples, and eventually those disciples spread his teaching into other areas, including other countries. And it is said that Bodhidharma came from India into China bringing and spreading Buddhism. And I talked about him in another episode not too long ago. Very interesting character, you know, at least the way he's described in literature. But he comes into China, and in China at the time, there was two major schools of thought. One was Confucianism, the other was Taoism. And it is said that his teaching, his Buddhist teaching, merged basically merged with Taoism, and that is what gives rise to Zen Buddhism. Now, Zen Buddhism eventually had its real, you know, growth in Japan and in other countries, but it also grew some in China. But it's just, you know, an interesting little historical note there that we see how Buddhism, as it carries out into different countries and different cultures, you can say, and I've heard this said before, which it makes a whole lot of sense, is that the Buddhism is able to merge or be expressed or manifested through in a way that is understood to that culture. So it's almost like it puts on a different disguise, right? And disguise is not quite the right word, but I think the meaning gets across. Is that there is a famous, I think it's in the Lotus Sutra, if I'm not mistaken. Sutra is another word for teaching. It is said that it talks about expedient means, which is an interesting topic. And it basically says that the Buddhism taught expedient means, which means that you don't force people who you are teaching to understand the teaching the way exactly that you teach it. You have to modify the teaching so that the person can understand it through their own lens of their own culture, their own upbringing. And this is what he called expedient means. It's whatever works, basically, right? We're going to use the most expedient means. So as Buddhism spread into these other countries, you can see how there's a good example of this, where it's kind of expressed through or combined with Taoism, and then we kind of see this new type of Buddhism, which is called Zen, and that's how we get all these different branches of Buddhism that exist today. Now, kind of digressed there a little bit. Let's go on talking about this chapter 58, but let me just pause here for a quick sec, allow a word from a sponsor, and I will be right back. All right, you all, I'm back. Thank you for your patience. Just let me take a quick moment here to tell you that if you ever want to ask me a question, make a suggestion, or express a concern, you can always email me at elucidatetherreal@gmail.com. You could also find the YouTube channel by the same name, Dreams Warp. Find any one of my videos, doesn't matter which, and just post a comment under it. Say, hey, I just heard your podcast. I get notified right away. And you could express your common concern or question there. And also wanted to let you know that I very recently started an account on Twitter, and I do post things, retweet things there every day. Good little reminders to focus on your practice, and you know, just remind you about topics that we discuss here on the podcast. So go ahead, follow me on Twitter, and get some good tidbits throughout the day. Finally, if you're enjoying this content and you're on Apple Podcasts, it really helped me out if you could leave a nice rating and a review. Okay, if you have the time, I appreciate that. All right, so going back to chapter 58, there's another thing that I want to touch on here, and it comes into play in the basically the second half, almost the end of it, actually. It says here, thus the master is content to serve as an example and not to impose her will. She is pointed but doesn't pierce, straightforward but supple, radiant but easy on the eyes. So again, we see this interplay of these opposites, right? And as I was saying earlier, that idea of balance, of moderation, of the middle way is just, it's a theme that appears so often. And what I think it points to is that the more we slip out of the middle way and we go into these extremes, then by nature, what starts to happen is that the opposite polarity starts to become also more pronounced. So, and you see this theme here, as we talked about, as I read a little bit ago, right? If you're governed with repression, people are crafty. When you search for power, the higher the ideals, the lower the results. And again, this is a theme that we see. So the more you try to control, for example, the more slips out of control. So we see this kind, almost like a little bit of a warning that the further you slip into extremes, right, in one direction, then you are automatically going to be creating more of the opposite in your reality. And that's something very important to be aware of, because even thinking like for myself as an example, you know, it's easy for me to get into extremes about perspectives, about ideals, about anything really. And it's something that has to be guarded against, because when you do that, again, you are actually, even though you are pushing for what you think is more of what you want, you actually inadvertently create more of what you don't want in your experience. So it's just interesting there, and it's a good little thing to think about as you live your life and as you, you know, work through your practice. Now, going back to those lines I read a little bit ago, the master's content to serve as an example and not impose her will. So that's another thing where I started, where I had said that if you have individuals who are fully aligned with the Tao, then there's very little need for morals to be, you know, put out there, etched in stone. There's very little need for laws to control behavior. There's very little need to try to force people to you know, try to determine what makes people happy and try to force them to follow that way to make them happy. But the thing that happens is that, at least according to you know, this book, is that the more those types of things are imposed, then automatically people tend to slip out of alignment. Again, because of that same pattern that I was just discussing, is that the more you push for something to be the way you want, the more you inadvertently create the opposite. And where he says, serve as an example. That is key. That is key, because that's another theme throughout the book, is that the leader does not see themselves as a leader. There's other lines in the Tao Te Ching that talks about, you know, a great leader helps, I'm paraphrasing, something like helps people to do, you know, to accomplish a task. But when they're done with the task, they feel, look, we did it all by ourselves. So the leader basically disappears. And so we see this theme, not exactly presented the same way in this chapter, but talking about how there's no will to impose. Again, there's no need to control. There's no need to force. That when you are fully aligned with the Tao, or fully awakened to universal consciousness, or fully aligned with source, whatever terminology you want to use, when you have that kind of connection or that kind of awareness of your already existing connection, then automatically, when people see you, they encounter you, they talk to you, they're automatically going to start to align more themselves. And there's no need for that leader or that awakened person to set up a lot of rules, a lot of ideals that people have to live by. And it's interesting, isn't it, this topic, because ironically, right, when you see people who have created, you know, these huge religious movements, or people who have, you know, started up governments, almost all of them across the board have certain set of rules, right, or guidance for behavior. Even the Buddha himself, in his early teachings, had written, you know, certain things for behavior, the Eightfold Path, right? And that's, you know, rightful speech, you know, mindfulness of this and that. I don't remember them all right now. But I guess it's all in how you use these suggestions, I think, is the best way to put it, is that we use them as guidance. But ultimately, and this is what I just love about Zen Buddhism specifically, is that Zen has a very kind of almost, what's the word, rebellious kind of nature, a tiny little bit, is that it rejects doctrine, it rejects the teachings of others. It basically says, look, these teachings are here, they can be helpful, right? But after you've gotten the help from them, you need to immediately like let them go. Like, you cannot achieve your own awakening, your personal awakening, through anybody else, through any kind of doctrine, through any kind of teaching, through any kind of, it has to come from a deep looking into the self. And that's the only way. Direct experience is often referred to as well as direct experience, right? And reading a certain set of doctrine or following a certain set of rules or learning from whatever teacher, that is, none of those things are direct experience. Those things can guide you, right? They can kind of, okay, try this, try that. Here, you know, here's a signpost, you know, here's a clue, here's some breadcrumbs. But ultimately, we all have to walk that journey ourselves. And if you have the motivation and the drive to continue along this journey, and you have that connection, you have that alignment, then you suddenly have this amazing kind of moment where you realize that you don't really need anything else. It goes back to something we've heard masters say for, gosh, thousands of years. Everything you could possibly want exists right here, right now. It's all within you, right? It's that limited thinking, rational mind that convinces us that it's not here yet. First, I need to do this. First, I need to have this. First, I need to have that. First, I need to get this accomplished. But literally everything is already here. Your source of joy, your source of connection, it's all available to you at this very moment. And so we come back to this chapter where it's written, you know, the more morals you have, the more you try to make people happy, the more rules you create, the less tolerant you are, then what's happened is that you are kind of feeding into this type of mind that says, well, we need all these things in place because people don't really know how to be happy. People don't know how to align to source. People don't know. And the more you try to do it for them, the more they will slip out of their own alignment. So it's very good. It's a very good chapter, very good message that we can get out of this chapter, just like all the chapters in this amazing book. I really hope that you got something out of today's episode that helps you in your practice for today. Stay tuned. I'll be back again with another episode in the near future. And just want to say thanks for listening. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.